Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Radio Network. Pro football full circle.
On second down, air it out, Deontay Harris. He's got it, touchdown, another for Winston.
Murray lofting it toward the end zone for Kirk, and Kirk's got it! Touchdown, Arizona, 26 yards. It's as if they were in their backyard designing that play.
Pressure, Hawk has it blocked, it's scooped up, and a score! Touchdown!
Week one is in the books. Welcome to Pro Football Full Circle right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius Channel 204. Joe Lisi and George Kurtz taking you around the NFL, talking about all the NFL week one action. Before we get into that, breaking news coming out of Washington, starting quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick does have a hip injury. He will not be ready for a period of time, which means backup Taylor Heinicke does get the start this Thursday night. We'll see if they can rebound after the home loss to LA yesterday. George, I mean, we saw great games yesterday. I mean, just fantastic finishes, games that came down to the fourth quarter. But I think the most surprising outcome yesterday happened to be that beatdown down in Jacksonville, where famous Jameis stepped up with five touchdown passes and just beat up Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, he had just about every team that has Green Bay on their schedule for a home game is now petitioning the NFL to be able to play that game in Jacksonville, as apparently, I don't know how big a factor it was, Rodgers' record in Florida, but that's one of the reasons why the Saints wanted to play there, and the Packers were terrible. The Saints were great. So it was definitely one of the biggest surprises of the day yesterday. It certainly was for me. And now, hey, you know, everybody had their doubts about Winston. Everybody. But one thing we did say, if Peyton has gotten him under control here, where he goes from 30 interceptions to, let's say, 12 to 15, that's still not great, but still, you know, it would be awesome if he could do that. They could be dangerous here. We know a defense is very, very good. So it's just a matter of that offense being able to contribute its part here, and it should only get better later in the season when Michael Thomas returns as well. Maybe we were a little too harsh on the Saints. Maybe they are coming marching in again.
Well, only time will tell. A dominant effort by Jameis Winston. Now, in terms of the yardage, only 148 yards through the air, five touchdowns, no interceptions. It was the inability of Aaron Rodgers and that offense to sustain drives and threaten on that New Orleans defense. When you look at Rodgers overall, 133 passing yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions. Did this look like a guy that was focused entering the season? All offseason, just give Aaron Rodgers whatever he wants. He's the guy. They were 13-3 last year, George, but they only beat two teams with a winning record in Tennessee and New Orleans. I mean, are we ahead of ourselves in terms of Green Bay being this elite team in the NFC? Can they rebound, or are there some flaws and a chink in the armor in Green Bay?
Well, generally, listen, but we know this is overreaction Monday, which is what everyone's going to do here. And I would normally chalk this up to it, but what's the word you used there? Beatdown? That's not being mean enough. They got obliterated, right? Crushed, decimated. That was ugly football by Green Bay. Ugly football here. So I'm more than willing to chalk it up to, okay, you know, one bad game. One bad game, fine. You weren't going to go 17-0 anyway. But I'm curious, as anybody else, see what's going to happen. Yeah, are they going to look better? Was Rodgers maybe not dialed in completely? I think it's just one bad game. I don't think Rodgers is throwing the season because he still wants to get out. The new conspiracy theory is going. I'm not going to buy any of that. But that was an ugly, ugly performance, and all eyes are going to be on the Packers this week.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't think he's throwing the season. I just think they were overhyped. I mean, granted, Aaron Rodgers, one of the best quarterbacks of all time. But at the end of the day, this team wasn't maybe as good as people thought based off the record. That's what I'm saying. And there were a couple other games yesterday where, we weren't really sure about, the top teams. Buffalo comes in. They had a 10-0 lead on Pittsburgh. And all of a sudden, Big Ben and the Pittsburgh Steelers rally for a 7-point win on the road. That was a critical road win to really come back from last year's loss, 26-15. They stepped up. How about Cleveland? They had Kansas City on the ropes. They had a 22-10 first half lead. They allowed that to slip, 33-29. And a team that you're high on in terms of the Tennessee Titans, they laid an egg as a 3-point favorite, where Arizona just stepped up, 38-13. Kyler Murray, 289 through the air. He hit Hopkins. He hit Christian Kirk. Rondell Moore got involved. If that defense plays the way they did against Derrick Henry, limiting him to basically 56 yards on the ground, they could be a contender in the NFC West.
Well, they're a contender anyway, but if that defense is going to play like that, they're not going away. The NFC West is a beast. Went 4-0 yesterday. All right, Seattle won, Arizona won, San Fran won, and I'm leaving out a team. This will bother me.
The Rams won last night.
And outside of San Fran, I can't say San Fran won convincingly. They should have won convincingly. Instead, they made that game extremely interesting late. They all looked very good. That's going to be a division from hell. I think what determines that division is when they play each other. Can anybody go 4-2, 5-1 against each other? Other than that, that is the division from hell. Tennessee, so disappointed. I think I was more disappointed in them than I was Green Bay yesterday.
Great quarterback play across the division. When we come back, we'll be breaking down the other games. Joe Lisi and George Kurtz right here on the grid. Keep it where it is.
We are your official source for gaming, odds, and more.
Except no substitutes.
They won't be around long anyway. This is the Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
There's listening to Sports Grid, then there's
listening to Sports Grid.
You know you're doing it right when friends ask you about the week's matchups, the wife is happy, and your teenager regards you with quiet awe.
Here's your slippers, Dad.
Keep listening to the Sports Grid Radio Network. You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Back on Pro Football Full Circle, Joe Lisi, George Kurtz, breaking down all the NFL Week 1 action. We talked about that Cleveland-Brown Kansas City Chiefs game. Cleveland took it to Kansas City in the first half. They score first, George. They go for two. They go up 8-0. Then they have a 12-point lead. Still have a fourth quarter lead. They botch the punt and allow Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs to pull that game out. 33-29. Cleveland does cover the opening spread at 6.5 for much of the summer. Got it down yesterday before kick at 4.5. But that was a dominant effort. I mean, they really had Kansas City on the ropes. A rematch of the playoff game. Baker Mayfield stepped up. The defense, though, in the end gave way. And if Kansas City's going to play like that, especially at home, this might not be a dominant team in 2021.
Kansas City's defense didn't look good, certainly for the first three quarters, at least, maybe three quarters plus. Maybe they figured something out at the end, maybe they didn't. Watching this game, it was a fun game to watch, right? It had everything you could want there. But I kept thinking of Dennis Green at the end here. They are who we thought they are, and we let them off the hook. because it came down to two plays, really. You mentioned the punt, and I really wish the punt, you know, he dropped the snap. It happens. Just kick it anyway. Don't. It was 4th and 15 or something like that. You weren't getting that first. And the punter looked athletic where he could get a couple of yards, but you're not going to get 15, 17 yards. Just kick it anyway on the run. You might get something. You know, if 10, 15, 20 yards, anybody will take that. You know, so just kick it anyway. And then the Tyreek Hill pass, the long pass. You know, it's one of those things where it's one-on-one with Hill. The cornerback was looking at Hill, not back at the quarterback, so Hill came in for the ball. And once he caught it, the cornerback's the only person there, and he's 2 yards away. It's all over but the crying. No one's catching Hill. He's gone. So, at my mind, that's what it came down to. Those two plays. Two mistakes. You take those away, and one's, listen, it's a magic play by Mahomes and Hill. That's tough to stop. But you take away that punt, it's a completely different game. Short field, easy score there. But a lot of fun there. I'm not panicking about KC, but I think they're going to play a lot of high-scoring games like this. I think in some ways they're just a better Dallas team. You know, their offense is really, really good. Defense is better than Dallas's, but not enough to stop anybody, at least not anybody with a good offense of themselves either. A lot of high-scoring games coming in Kansas City.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you concerned about the lack of rushing game? 73 basically rushing yards on the ground yesterday in terms of that performance. Now, we know that Cleveland does have a rock-solid front seven led by Myles Garrett in that regard. So any concern about this offense moving forward? Because that was the main concern as they went through the playoffs. They did not have a consistent running game with Darrell Williams and even Le'Veon Bell last year in the playoff run. And when Hilaire came back, Clyde Edwards-Hilaire, they did not run the football consistently against Tampa Bay in the Super Bowl. So are we concerned at all as this offense goes? Because we know how great Patrick Mahomes is. But if you can make them one-dimensional, you now have a leg up from a defensive perspective to at least compete against Kansas City each and every week without a balanced attack, without having to worry about the running game. So when we break them down after 1 week, no concern that they couldn't run the football for well over 100 yards yesterday?
Oh, there's a concern. I mean, it sort of follows what we saw last year. I mean, you said Cleveland has a really good run defense, but, you know, no one is game planning to stop Hilaire or Williams or Jerick McKinnon or whoever else they throw back there. Because everyone's game planning on how to stop Mahomes, Hill, Kelsey, and they can't do that anyway. Right? So he's never going to see an 8-man box. Right? Never going to see a stacked line to stop him. No, and he still can't get any yardage. Right? I mean, I think as a defensive coordinator, you almost bring, it's a run play. Good. You know, that sort of thing. Because it's not Mahomes' hand. You're not going to get any big plays out of it. So, yeah, I think you have to be concerned. Once again, am I going to panic right now? No. I'm trying not to think about last year when they couldn't get this game going either. You know, I'm going to worry about this year. You know, where, okay, it's one game. One game, not a big deal. You know, Cleveland, good run defense. You know, the game plan may not have been the run. Who knows? Maybe Kansas City want to throw the ball more. But sooner or later, you got to get that going. And next week's likely not to be any easier. They play Baltimore. You know, you got the Chargers. I don't know when they're going to be able to run the ball.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that last year we saw them just basically walk through the motions, right? Yeah, we'll build a big lead and against Miami, and we'll let them come back. We'll play down to the level of competition with Matt Ryan and the terrible Atlanta Falcons. No problem. We can win that ball game by 3 and grind it out. Now they fall behind at home week 1. You knew that Cleveland was going to be amped up to play that ball game in your house, especially when you know that they had them basically on life support last year with Chad Henne, couldn't close the door. So where was the killer mentality out of Patrick Mahomes and the crew? If Cleveland, let's say, gets that punt off, there's no guarantee that they pull that game out. I mean, it was only due to solid field position, and basically that's where the Cleveland defense just allowed it to just, you know, break down at that point. You know, it wasn't due to making plays, so to speak, from an offensive perspective consistently. Their defense stepped up when they had to, but at the end of the day, you can't rely on that week to week to win football games.
No, but you keep bringing up things on other games where they happen to win. Well, that's not all coincidence either. Now, they do happen to win games. They're not a lucky team. They end up finding ways to win, and there's something to be said for that. Like I said, it was a tough game yesterday. It was the game I think I mentioned many times during the offseason I wanted to watch because I really wanted to see what Cleveland was about. And boy, did I like them for 3 quarters until they really, I don't know, they stopped doing things. I don't know if Kansas City made the adjustment, which if they did, great for them. But the things they were working in the first three quarters weren't really working in the fourth quarter. I thought they panicked a little bit once they got behind. Once Kansas City got close within one score, I thought they changed up a little bit. But listen, Kansas City's been there year after year after year. You know, I'm not worried about them. They're going to score points. They're going to give up points. It's the way they play football. Is it a perfect game? No. Is it dangerous? Yes. We saw it last year. You all of a sudden in the Super Bowl, you ran into a really, really good defense at Tampa Bay, and you were done. Because you had nothing else you could do. You couldn't rely on the running game because the passing game is not working. You couldn't rely on that running game because the front four of Tampa was, was living in your backfield to get Mahomes. You know, the running game wasn't good enough to pick that up to make them stop coming at the Mahomes. So is that going to change? No. I don't think no matter what happens. I think the running game will get better, but it's not going to be anywhere near, forget elite, it won't be near good. I think the best that Kansas City can hope for as far as the run game is to be above average.
Well, I saw a crazy stat on NFL.com about Cleveland. You want to talk about a jinx or a hex? Since 1999, Cleveland in week one matchups, 121-1 straight up. They had Kansas City on the ropes. I mean, all they had to do was close that game yesterday. They win their second game, week number one, since 1999, and instead they dropped that ball game. How does that affect this team moving forward, right? We know they're still basically a young team. Baker Mayfield did toss for 321, no touchdowns, one INT. Nick Chubb, a pedestrian for him, 83 rushing yards, two touchdowns. Again, you know, they need to rebound now. They can't just say, okay, we played well, but you didn't play well enough to get the W. Now you have to regroup. You have to find your identity, and now you need to reel off three or four wins to showcase that this team was for real and last year was not an aberration.
That's not true. All right, they showed yesterday they're for real. No matter how you look at it, they played a Kansas City team that's been in the Super Bowl a couple of years right down to the wire. So they don't need to show anybody they need to play another three, four good games to show they're for real. They're for real. No one's taking Cleveland lightly. So I don't think that at all here. That being said, I can see it being a little down. I mean, are they going to be a team that, you know, every NFL team likes to give you, 24 hours, right? 24 hours you can enjoy the win or sulk in the loss, whatever. But after that, you know, it's on to Cincinnati. It's on to this, on to that. You know, you forget about it. Are they that team? I don't know. We're going to find out. That being said, you know, I know the Texans wiped out the Jaguars yesterday. They do get a nice soft home opener against Houston next Sunday. So I think they'll be just fine and take care of business there. So I think they'll be back and they'll forget that loss kind of quickly. But I might wonder more if I don't know when their next tough game is. I'd have to look up the schedule and see when they play another playoff team. Maybe it's Baltimore, maybe it's Pittsburgh. And if they were to lose in the same fashion, Joe, yeah, then I might be more concerned that it could affect them when they keep losing against good teams like this.
Tyrod Taylor did toss for 291 and two touchdowns in the 38-21 victory over Urban Meyer and the Jacksonville Jaguars. When we come back, we'll be breaking down the other games. Keep it where it is.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
To Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Continuing the coverage of the week one matchups, we left off with Jacksonville and Houston. I mentioned that Houston did win 38-21. Check that. 37-21. Tyrod Taylor with a big day yesterday. 291 through the air, two touchdowns, no interceptions. You saw old man Mark Ingram step up with 85 rushing yards and a touchdown on the ground. How about Brandon Cooks, 1,100-yard receiver last year? I tell you what, he could be hitting stride. Five receptions, 132 yards receiving, no touchdowns, but targeted seven times by Tyrod Taylor. The offense looked in motion. They looked cohesive. Offensive line gave Taylor time to attack that secondary of Jacksonville. Last year, they won one game and then lost 15 straight. Maybe they lose one game to start 2021, and maybe we reel off five or six wins for Urban Meyer and the crew this year. What do you think, George?
You know what I think. All right? I think
they're horrible.
Yes. I do think they're horrible, and that's not going to change. All right, this is a bad team. All right, it's going to take more than one offseason to fix here. Trevor Lawrence, by the way, man, he's got a gun. He needs to throw an off-speed pitch. Even on the close pass, he's ripping those in there. I mean, my God. He's going to start breaking some fingers there. Take some heat off that ball, young man. But they're a bad team. They don't have much of a defense right now. It's going to take some time. They need some offensive line help as well there. So, like I said, I think they'll be a top-five draft pick next year. Maybe they'll win 3-4 games, maybe. If you can't give Houston a good game, then who are you going to beat? I mean, who are you going to beat? So they're going to have some issues this year. But as for Houston, you know, sort of the opposite. Okay, you know, let's rein it in here. All right, this is another bad team. Just they beat a worse team. I don't know. So they're not going anywhere either. And they don't want to go anywhere, right? They want the draft picks. That's what's kind of funny here. Jacksonville probably wanted to win the game much more than the Houston organization did. Only thing that's good for Houston is that this sort of takes some of the heat off the Deshaun Watson, right? Maybe we won't talk about that for a week or two until they start playing bad again. But Taylor looked good. He did look good. And Brandon Cooks got good for him. But once again, once you're playing a real team, team with a much better defense, which is going to happen, these numbers are going to get much more in check here. And let's not forget that Houston won their first game last year, too.
Well, we'll see how this season plays out for both teams. I think the biggest takeaway was Tyrod Taylor not given the opportunity last year, right, for the Chargers, where his lung was punctured. He stepped up. Good for him. I mean, that's still good to see him get out there and toss two touchdowns, lead his team to victory, especially when he gave way to the offensive rookie player of the year in terms of Justin Herbert, right? I mean, not given that opportunity. So this offense, though, can score. Now, I think when you look at Jacksonville as a whole, I disagree that they're just completely horrible. I mean, granted that Trevor Lawrence was making his first career start. He was on the road, even though it was a terrible team. They fell behind 14-0. He throws three picks, but he comes back. He throws three touchdowns as well. That maybe can carry them through. Now, this week's game is Denver, so it's still a step up in terms of a defensive perspective. But there is a couple of things to build upon in terms of the offensive perspective for this Jacksonville offense.
Oh, absolutely. Jacksonville offense should be able to score some points. Now, you mentioned, I think it was during the break, about Robinson, which is surprising that they didn't use him as much yesterday. I know they got behind quick, so that sort of made, game flow. What are you going to do? Got to throw the ball there. But still somewhat surprising that they didn't use him as much. I think the game against Denver this week will be closer. Denver looked good against the Giants yesterday. Made some mistakes down in the red zone that really cost them some points there. But they're not a dynamic offense. Yeah, so it's their home opener for Jacksonville. That should help. Since it's hot there, they'll be hoping that Denver wilts as the game goes on, that sort of thing. I'm sure they'll be wearing their white jerseys, make Denver wear the blue ones, so it attracts heat and all that. But like I said, bottom line is Jacksonville's not a good team. I don't care how much you want to build up Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence and you love your college and all that. That's great. You're not a good NFL team. And that's not going to change. Maybe they can squeeze out a win here or there. But like I said, I bet the undefinished team for the season total, which I think, I forget what it was, 6.5 maybe. I don't even think they come close to that. Yeah, I think they're a 3-4 win team.
All right, we'll see. We'll see how the season plays out for Trevor Lawrence and the crew. How about Denver? We talked about Denver being a potential wild card team. I did, as long as Teddy Bridgewater's at the helm. Well, steps up, 264 passing yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. The game manager did have a 20-point lead in the fourth quarter, and the same MO for New York and Daniel Jones, the human turnover machine. Daniel Jones, you could throw Kirk Cousins, and you could even throw Andy Dalton in there in terms of putting their teams in bad spots. I mean, he's driving, has a potential touchdown drive, fumbles the football. Next thing you know, Teddy B comes right down the field and stuffs it right into the end zone. This defense stepped up. They limited the New York Giants, made them one-dimensional. And I think if they play that way with Teddy B at the helm, over 8.5 should be very easy for the Broncos in 2021.
You know, this may be the overreaction part. Everything pretty much you just said there. Let's whoa it down. When did the Giants become this great team where beating them is a big thing there? That being said, yeah. I mean, I was against Teddy B starting, but not because he can't start, because I thought they needed to find out about Drew Lock. Yeah, that's why I would have started Lock. Because now you're moving on from him. And you'll never know if he was a guy or not. The next team will find out. And you might regret it later on there. Teddy B is what he is. You know, he's not going to lift the team on his shoulders there. Locke could have done that, but in all honesty, Locke could also throw three interceptions. That was the problem. Locke had maybe a higher ceiling, but also a much lower floor. Teddy B, as you said, you called him the game manager. I might give him a little bit higher than that. But he won't make the mistakes that Locke would have. Girl, we know Denver has the defense, and they did this damage to the Giants yesterday without Bradley Chubb, who was a we knew late in the week that he may or may not play. They decided to give him an extra week. Probably the right move there. Well, definitely the right move. They won the game. So that should make that defense even better. I think Denver can be a wild. They're not easily going to go over it. We said easily they're going to be 10, 11 wins. That's probably not happening. But I think they could go over. Sure, they're somewhere around that 8-win mark, 10-win mark, 9, somewhere in there. But they're going to play tougher competition there. The Denver Broncos, they're an interesting team. They did lose Jerry Jeudy. Now, he's not going to be back until it looks like November. With that ankle sprain, that was a nasty. I don't know if you saw the injury, Joe, but for a while there, I thought that was another Dak Prescott. I thought that ankle was dislocated, where it was out. And I was like, oh, it's one of those where you get a little nauseous when you see it there. So the ankle sprain is good news there. Nothing broken, and like the season, but it's not going to be for. I think it was 6 to 8 weeks. Is his diagnosis. Cortland Sutton, did it surprise you? One catch, uno. All right, I know, once again, Giants good secondary, but he's come back from that ACL. I wonder how ready he is. So did it surprise you that Cortland Sutton had one whole catch?
No, and I was being sort of facetious about Teddy Bridgewater because that's his knock. He's a game manager. I thought he played fantastic. He put his team in a position to win, and you mentioned that he's not a guy that's going to make those players or elevate those players around him better. He got the win, and that's all he does. And I don't look at last year. Everybody wants to look at last year with a first-year head coach, a new offensive coordinator, and say, you know what, Teddy B, yeah, they were 4-12 last year. He was terrible, threw 15 interceptions. No, he just wasn't a right fit for Joe Brady and that offensive philosophy, that's all. And to say that Teddy Bridgewater, it doesn't elevate the players around him, he wins football games. What more do you want? I'd rather have a guy that throws for 264, doesn't turn the football over. Maybe you're not going to throw it 80 yards every time in terms of those vertical passes like Russell Wilson, but he could get it down the field, and you could rely on your defense because he covers games, he wins games outright. What more do you need to do to get the nod in terms of the public sentiment that you're a good quarterback?
Well, once again, you make it sound like because he won one game that, he wins football games. Well, he won one game. He did go 4-4.
Wait a second. This is the knock. Teddy Bridgewater took over Minnesota, took him to a playoff game. Did he not? Did he not take the Minnesota Vikings to a playoff appearance back when they were absolutely horrible? Did he not take over for Drew
Brees?
So
now we're going on stuff over three, 4 years ago.
So what I'm saying is, where hasn't he been successful outside of Carolina?
Well, people will easily point this out for you, Joe. Why is this his fourth team? If he's
because,
so good.
I'll tell you why.
Would you like
to
know why?
I'll tell you why. Because scouts and GMs want the live arm. They want the Brett Favre type of guy. They're all looking for Aaron Rodgers. But you go back. Let me ask you this. Tom Brady, he got the knock as well. He was a Joe Montana type of guy. Didn't have the strongest arm. Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. I mean, go back. Brad Johnson won a Super Bowl. If he brings you a Super Bowl and gives your team an opportunity to win, what more do you need? I mean, let's be honest. Was Drew Brees, did he have the strongest arm at the end of his career?
No, but once you're established, you're established.
Okay. Drew Brees. All right, so Drew Brees gets the pass because he's Drew Brees and won a Super Bowl back in 2010, 2011, whenever that year was.
Well, let's not act like Drew Brees was terrible over 10 years, Joe. Come on.
But we're making it sound like he had the strongest arm in creation last year over the last couple of years.
But comparing Drew Brees to Bridgewater is silly.
But
all right, you're comparing a whole famer to Teddy Bridgewater.
Yes, but I'm talking about arm strength. I'm not talking about career and body of work. We're talking about arm strength and the ability to push the ball down the field. Did Eli Manning have the same type of arm strength as Teddy Bridgewater, who's in his 20s? I mean, come on
now. Once again, Eli was someone who should have been replaced 4 or 5 years before he went. And the Giants wouldn't. We see this all the time with football. And actually,
yeah,
most
I know.
Sports, probably,
and
not
that's
football.
That's the point that I'm trying to make, is that sometimes it's not the best assessment. I mean, he's a guy that wins football games. Yes, he's not a guy that's going to throw it 50 yards down the field like Russell Wilson on every play. But if he puts your team in a position to win games, that's good enough for me. And as fans, that should be all you want out of your quarterback. I mean, I totally disagree on the breakdown of Teddy Bridgewater. We'll get into it on the back end. When we come back, we'll also break down Russell Wilson and Carson Wentz. Keep it where it is.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Continuing the conversation of Teddy Bridgewater and the other starting quarterbacks in the NFL, George and I severely disagree on this argument. All I'm trying to say about Teddy Bridgewater, George, is that he puts your team in a position to win. He's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not Tom Brady in terms of that eliteness. Russell Wilson, I get that. But he's not a quarterback that's going to make mental mistakes. He's a gamer. He can lead your team from behind. And that should be good enough for a lot of teams in the NFL. And I brought up the point to you about Teddy Bridgewater when he was on the Jets. Was he not the best quarterback over Sam Darnold at that particular time? You're telling me if the Jets didn't go to Bridgewater then, they couldn't win football games?
I didn't tell you anything. You know, so you're putting a lot of words in my mouth here about what I feel here. What I told you about is that most teams are going to start the rookie quarterback, the younger quarterback. They got to find out. You know, most teams, almost every team does that. You draft someone in the first round, you're going to find out about that quarterback. Would Bridgewater have been better than Darnold? Of course. Any veteran quarterback is likely better than a rookie quarterback in year one, but they got to find out. Got to find out that's the guy. If not, you got to move on. You're not going to win in the NFL until you find a quarterback. It's just the way the game is. So was Bridgewater better than Darnold? Sure. I think Sam Darnold's terrible. I don't think he played all that great yesterday. You know, but they beat the Jets. But to compare the two at that point in their careers is kind of silly. Most veterans are better. Your journeyman veteran is going to be better than that rookie quarterback, other than a guy who's a transcendent rookie quarterback, like Lawrence might be. That kind of guy. He might be better automatically coming in. Andrew Luck when he came out. That kind of guy. But no one ever said that Teddy B wasn't going to be a better quarterback or wasn't at that time a better quarterback. Mm-hmm. But as an NFL team, you're doing yourself a huge disservice if you're not going to find out about that rookie.
All right. Well, I'll just throw these stats at you and we'll move over to Seattle and Indianapolis. In 2019, when he took over for Drew Brees, 1,384 yards, 9 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. He was 5-0 as a starter, or 5-1, I believe, 99 quarterback rating. 2020 with Carolina, 3,733 yards, 15 TDs, 11 interceptions, 92 quarterback rating. When you look at some of the garbage quarterbacks in the NFL, he gets bashed more than a quarterback like Andy Dalton does. I mean, and that's what it really comes down
to.
Andy Dalton's getting bashed.
We've been crushing Dalton for a decade. Are you kidding me?
Well,
that's not lie here.
Yeah, but he gets the nod to be a starter in Chicago. And Teddy Bree, it's like he's got to fight for an opportunity. I mean, it's just amazing. And the kid's young. The kid's under 30 years old. So why he's not given more opportunities, or why teams didn't want him? Besides me, we'll go to the other game in Indianapolis. Everyone's favorite, right? Carson Wentz. This was the second coming when he came to Philadelphia out of North Dakota State with a body of work that was basically, I want to just say, he came as a national champion, but outside of that, played with the best team at the FCS level. Well, he struggled yesterday. Russell Wilson stepped up 254 yards through the air, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, hit Tyler Lockett on multiple plays, the big play over the top for about a 65-yard touchdown. They dominate as a 3-point favorite, 28-16. I think if you're Frank Reich and you're Indianapolis, you're a little concerned now. You know, Frank Reich stepped up for Carson Wentz. This was his guy. You forced him back into action week one. He did not look into rhythm. And more importantly, the lack of consistency out of the offensive line is a concern early on for Indianapolis.
Well, one thing I'll disagree, though, we all like Carson Wentz, but another guy we've been killing for a couple of years. With that being said, I agree. I think you have to be concerned. Now, listen, he missed practice. They admitted yesterday, we found that that foot is still sore. I imagine Nelson's is still sore, too. And we've talked ad nauseum about this tough opening schedule for Indianapolis. I don't know if it matters who the quarterback is. All right, their schedule is brutal here. You played Seattle yesterday, and they looked great, and if they're going to let Russell Wilson cook, right? They're going to let him throw the football. They're going to be a dangerous team here. But I don't know if it mattered. No, Peyton Manning was the starting quarterback there. That was going to be a tough win anyway, and it doesn't get any easier. All right, you play the Rams this week. Then, well, maybe it does with Tennessee. Who knows? Miami in Miami, Baltimore. He's going to throw three straight road games at Tennessee, Miami, Baltimore. After Seattle, after the Rams. Good luck. Good luck. Now, so you need to survive that. You really need to survive that, boys. The season's going to be lost real quick for the Indianapolis Colts, no matter how good a team I think they might be here. But, yeah, I think they're worried about Wentz. I think you have to be because he didn't get off to that good start. You lost T.Y. Hilton. Run game looked good, but there's a lot of issues going on with Indianapolis, and I do wonder if this season can get away from them real quick.
We'll see what transpires. I mean, the one thing that I didn't like was their inability to convert on third down consistently. Carson Wentz still struggling with, in my opinion, reads and progressions, especially at the wide receiver position. That needs to change. Maybe he develops now back in the offense, gets a little more practice time. We'll see what transpires. But I'll tell you what, Seattle, to me, they're just never given enough credit. I mean, out of all the teams in the NFC West, we talked about Arizona. We're going to talk about Matt Stafford in terms of that performance last night. But all they do is win, baby. They're methodical. They wear you down. And the offense and defensive lines really stepped up. I mean, I haven't seen anything yesterday that leads me to believe that Seattle's not going to be there in terms of one of the best teams in the NFC this season.
Agreed. No, I haven't been in the playoffs, so absolutely agreed. I think, once again, can't say this enough. They've been very conservative, even with Russell Wilson. If they're going to let him play football and let him be the focal part of this team, focal point of this team, damn, that team's going to score some points. They're going to score some points. Chris Carson, please stop putting the football on the ground. That would be nice. But we know with Lockett and DK Metcalf had a quiet game yesterday until late. This team's going to score points. Let Russell Wilson play.
I do want to talk about San Francisco. You brought it up in terms of the break where they built a big lead, right? And then they allowed Detroit. At one point, Detroit had the football with about 30 seconds left, down by 8 points. They did not show a killer instinct. They played well for three quarters. Do you think they took the foot off the gas thinking that there's no way Jared Goff and the crew would come back or at least fight back into this ballgame with a new head coach? That was a pretty good effort out of Detroit. That being said, I still think they're one of the worst teams in the NFL. No identity. But what'd you think about the San Francisco performance yesterday? Because I take away good job by Garoppolo, bad job by that secondary in the second half.
I would go with you, yeah. I think they did. I think you put it perfectly. I think they did take the foot off the gas. They thought the game was over, lost that adrenaline, that extra edge. And credit to Detroit. They came rolling back. I would like to see them come back the full way. Hell, I would have liked to see them win the game 41-38. That Dan Campbell news conference would have been epic, you know, to see what he would have been saying there. That being said, it didn't happen at the end. Goff looked like Goff in that final drive. You know, that last pass he threw to nobody. I mean, come on. He had nothing to lose there. Just put it up in the air, see what happens. So, you know, I think once again, San Fran took him a bit. They figured it out. Deebo Samuel fumbling on that last possession when the game was over. He had the first down. That's it. Game's over. And then he got stripped and he fumbled. Detroit recovers, and here we go. Would have been one hell of an Alcoa fantastic finish if you're old enough to remember that. But they held on. So I think it's one of those ones where you put in the category of, you know, ugly win better than pretty loss.
Well, I'll tell you this. A cause of concern for Detroit moving forward is, and we said it all offseason, who's the weapon on the outside of tight end T.J. Hockenson? Leads the team with 8 receptions, 97 yards. You look at the second and third receivers for Detroit yesterday, DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams. Your 2 running backs. Are you kidding me? That means Goff is checking down for numerous periods of time. You can't get a wide receiver to get 5 receptions? I mean, Khalif Raymond, 3 receptions. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 2 receptions. That's it? That's going to be the Achilles heel for this team moving forward. It's going to be short to intermediate throws. Even though they sail through the total, you might look at Detroit for a number of under games this season because these wide receivers are pathetic.
Oh, I think that's the plan. All right? I think Detroit's going to run all year long. Yeah, with Swift and Williams. The offensive line is good. They don't have the outside weapons, as you just said. So I think everything is based on those two running backs, whether it's running the ball or catching, pretty much, you know, catching runs out of the backfield and short passes here. That's why I expect them to play a lot of quick games. They want to control the clock as much as they can and get that, get their defense off the field, keep their offense on the field, but they know they're not going to be able to score points. They can't match up with anybody, which is why when San Fran got out to that big lead yesterday, I mean, most of us thought the game, all right, that's it. Not even watching that game anymore. Next, you know, surprise when you look up, oh my God, how did Detroit get back in this? You know, so it is what it is with Detroit. It's a rebuilding team, and they know that. You know, it's another team that probably, deep down, doesn't want to win. They know they need those top picks to really get back in this. It's going to be a few years for Detroit.
Well, you saw Matt Stafford early on. Takes his opening possession, 3 plays, 80 yards, bam, hits Jefferson with a big touchdown. That opened up the scoring for L.A. They never looked back, 34-14 over Chicago. For me, it was a great performance by Stafford. Still not sold on the front 7, I got to be honest. Montgomery was able to pound the rock, especially in the first half, on Aaron Donald and that front 7. You want to see them get a little bit more physical at the point of attack as the season progresses. But more importantly, Andy Dalton, he's not the future of Chicago. Justin Fields is. L.A. looks good, but Chicago, unless they make a move, is going to be a 4-win football team this year.
I have nothing else to say here. I think you covered it, right? I thought Montgomery looked great, though. My God, he looked fast. Didn't he? I mean, he looked like he could be an elite running back. He really did. Liked what I saw from him there, but that's about it, you know, from Chicago. Fields has to play. He just has to play. I hope it's this week, but who knows? I think they're going to do the same thing. Maybe add a few more packages for Fields. You saw it yesterday. He was in at times. I think they'll do a few more next week, but they want Dalton. Yeah, it's Dalton going to Cincinnati. He's going to play against his former team. Yeah, blah, blah. And we'll see what goes on from there. But I think Fields will take the reins. I think it was Mike Blewett who brought this up, that week 4 might make the most sense here. Because as I said, Dalton against Cincinnati, they might want to let him start his former team there. Cincinnati could go 2-0. And then the week after that, they played that tough Cleveland team. Maybe that's not a good spot for Fields. You know, I think they could use that as an excuse. Listen, not, if it's me, I would have started Fields this season. I don't care about the Rams and Aaron Donald as far as that. He's got to play other tough teams. But then you get that the soft landing. And this is where Blewett was going with this. The soft landing spot is Detroit at home week 4. Then even week 5, you go into Vegas. Sure, it's a road game, but it's Vegas, not the greatest defense on the planet. So I get where Blewett's going for this, and it does make some sense here. But please, I've had enough of Dalton last a lifetime.
Yeah, me too. And enough, you know, I understand we want to baby these guys and their kids, maybe under 25. They're getting paid millions of dollars. Throw them into the fire. If they can't handle it, guess what? They shouldn't be a starting quarterback in the NFL. I mean, this methodology that they have to be eased into this, we don't do it in terms of any other sport. I just don't understand why we have to ease them in terms of the starting lineup. Put them into the fire. If he can't handle it, you got yourself a guy that maybe it shouldn't be a starting quarterback in the NFL. But I'll tell you what, a quarterback that maybe people didn't think could be the starter, Jalen Hurts, showcased his skill set yesterday in Atlanta. 264 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, dynamic, especially in the second half. And how about Devontae Smith, Heisman Trophy winner, did catch a touchdown and led the Eagles 71 receiving yards. I thought Arthur Smith was supposed to be this offensive guru, didn't showcase that yesterday in Atlanta.
You know, it's funny, this is the second time This is the second time on the show, by the way, where everything you said is true, and all I think of was a negative. The Atlanta Falcons looked terrible yesterday. My God, was that offense putrid, especially after the first two drives.
But they drafted Kyle Pitts. Remember Kyle Pitts? The world game changers are number 4 overall. When we come back, we'll wrap it up.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Pro Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and George Kurtz.
Wrapping up today's show, talking about all the week one action. I left off talking about Arthur Smith and Matty Ice. We talked about it entering this ballgame, how Matt Ryan brought up that the offense might not show consistency until late October, early November. If that's the case, and this is the way they're going to play each and every Sunday, I got to be honest with you. This is a 2-win football team with Arthur Smith at the helm, and they should have went with a quarterback in terms of Justin Fields when they had a chance to draft him instead of taking Kyle Pitts at number 4 overall, Georgie.
Agreed. I 100% agree with you. Said this during the draft. How could you pass on a quarterback then? I mean, once again, maybe they knew they were going to be horrible. You know, maybe we are going to be a 2-15 team. We'll get a quarterback next year. We'll get Pitts this year. All right, that's fine. I get it. But to pass on those quarterbacks when you needed one, I mean, you're going to need one in a year or two. You really couldn't get away from Ryan's contract this year unless you wanted to eat a lot of cap room like the Rams did, like several other teams are okay with doing, Philadelphia. But they're going to need a quarterback. It's not really all on Ryan, but that, like I say, it was bad. They weren't throwing the ball to the secondary. Losing Julio Jones is massive. And I've said it many times. I'm not just someone who thinks Calvin Ridley is going to be the next great thing. Becoming a number 2, then going to a number one cornerback now, you're going to get a safety over the top a lot. Plus, the defense cares about you a whole hell of a lot more now. It was all on Jones before, and Pitts is not surprising. I don't know how many times I said it. The history of first-year tight ends is not good. It takes time to learn that position. He had, through the first 3 quarters, 1 catch for like 7 yards. He did kind of pick up a few more catches in the fourth quarter. Nothing big there. It's going to take time for Pitts. This is a bad, bad football team.
I agree. I think they're gonna struggle to score points this year. They could be a dead under. That secondary that was dead last in terms of the NFL and pass defense did not get better in the offseason. And if you saw Jalen Hurts abuse them with those wide receivers, keep an eye out for weeks 2, 3, and beyond. We're going to be here with you all week. Tomorrow we'll be starting to break down week number 2 for George Kurtz and our producer, Andrew Torres. I'm Joe Lisi. Have a great day, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius Channel 204.